What's up, everybody? Armand here, back with another episode. This one's pretty awesome. We have the return of Stephen Pemberton doing a Where Are They Now episode. So Stephen has pivoted Holoco, the entire business model. He's doing something completely different, and I thought it'd be a lot of fun to have him back on the show to talk about that. And a lot of fun it was. We talk about so many different things, not just the nature of his pivot and what he's doing, but how a guest from this podcast connected with Stephen, and now it changed the nature of his business again. Now he's gotten a lot of good outcomes based on that. We talk about how letting go of your ego, which could lead to very good, more positive outcomes, and in this case, more customers. Pretty sweet. Stephen shares his just absolutely fantastic mindset, which helps him not only keep positive and open-minded in life, but helps him feel fulfilled and do what he loves to do every day. And then we also talk about how giving some of your free time to others for free and helping them out can lead to a very positive change in your own self. That goes a little bit along his mindset, the fulfillment, and how it all kind of connects. I think this guy, Stephen Pemberton, is just a fantastic example of work-life balance. He's just someone that really feels like he's got it figured out. And I know he'll say there's a lot of work to be done and there's a lot to figure out, but just this guy is miles ahead of so many other people I've talked to, and I really enjoyed this conversation. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as well. Thank you for listening to the Play Hard Podcast.
Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard.
I am doing
work
great. Hard, play hard. Life is great. What about you, my friend?
It's going really well. It's going really well. For the listener, this is Stephen Pemberton. We've had him on before. Real listeners will recognize. And the reason I want to do this update episode is, number one, I really like talking to Stephen. We've actually talked a lot offline. He's been helping me stay accountable lately, and it's been good stuff. But also, he's changed the nature of his business. After a talk with another friend of the show, Josh Boone, I think he's changed the nature of the business again. So, lots to talk about, lots to update. Let's get into it, Stephen.
Awesome, let's do it.
Sweet. So, is the company still going by the same name? Have you changed the name of the company?
Nope, name's the same. So Holoco is still the name of the game for this point in time.
That's right. Didn't have to change anything for marketing. So
nope.
In the past, let's say, what was it, like 7 months, how did Holoco change? What was the big shift that happened?
So there's been one really big shift and then micro pivots in it. So the one really big shift is the last time we spoke, we were helping brick-and-mortar e-commerce businesses come online. So that's where we were when I was so graciously lit on the podcast last time. And what's radically changed is we don't do that anymore. And for the listeners, the ones asking why, that seems like an interesting business idea. With that business, there's a lot of people who are brick and mortar, and there's a lot of people that you can go and find clients, but the money just wasn't there for us. Like for us, and I'm real transparent. So for us, we were charging, I think we charged that client, the one client we had, $10,000, and it wasn't enough. Because the way that we had structured it is we were building out a Shopify store. We were building out like his entire ad strategy, doing all of the content, listing all the products. Like we were doing everything. And it was just way too much work. We were even taking care of the social media, like posting on every single social media that they had. So it was so much work. And we also included the ad spend in our $10,000. So with that being said, is we were just like eating ourselves alive. And it was not worth it. So
yeah, so you weren't just
go ahead.
Like bringing brick and mortar shops online. You were basically their marketing team.
Yes, we were beginning and end. We were everything. I mean, marketing on the front end. We were also doing all their social media. It was just so much. It was way too much. There was a gentleman I spoke to that he was charging people $63,000 a year to do the same thing we were doing for $10,000. It was just like we didn't, because of us including the ad spend in that budget, there was not enough for us to be able to contract anything out. There was not enough for us to be able to do anything besides try to do everything. And we were able to get that person some sales, but it was not, it just wasn't worth it. It just wasn't worth it in the long term.
Yeah. So this was, okay, I'm remembering your story. Like, this was something that took you from being in serious debt to starting, what was it, multi-million? I think it was around 2 million in sales 1 year.
So e-commerce was the way that we got into it. Like, we had done e-commerce for ourselves for years. We did it for like 4 years before we started helping other people. So, yeah.
Okay. But then it was when you started consulting out, that was, it was just not the same because from what I'm gathering, it was the, like the target audience, like people who were not in brick and mortar, there was probably a really good reason they weren't in it. They just didn't like the technology of it, or they just didn't want to be in it. And it, they were not only was it not making enough, but it was a difficult customer base.
Yes, absolutely. It was a difficult customer base. It was just the margins weren't really there. If we would have done it just the way that we knew, like just to consult, if we would have just consulted, it would have been worth it. But for us trying to be anything and everything, it was not worth it.
That makes sense. All right, so now let's get into the pivot. So what did you switch your business to, which from what it sounds like, it is pretty different from what you were doing?
Yes, so we pivoted away from that into doing virtual events. So what that looks like now, then whenever I said virtual events, it was challenges. That's like the big thing that people have heard of, like Tony Robbins does them, Grant Cardone, Russell Brunson. Those are the three big names that run challenges. So we're in that space. And we've been in that space since, I don't know, probably July of 2022. We've been there. But now we've kind of fleshed it out more after talking with Josh, where it's much more open, more easy to understand for the normal person. It's like they done for you virtual event service. So that way it's more open-ended. People at least understand what a virtual event is for the most part.
Okay. So what would you say? Cause I'm not going to lie, I was having some difficulty understanding what a challenge is, mainly because I'm not really on Facebook.
Yeah.
But like, what is the difference, number one, between a virtual event and a challenge?
So there's a lot. One is virtual events range from everything from webinars to the big virtual events that you may see people put on where it's like a virtual summit where you got to buy tickets to it. And then the difference is challenges is more easily accessible. And what I mean by that is you're just pushing people to a Facebook group. You're going live in that group for 3 to 5 days. You are being the hero and the guide of the story where you are saying, hey, I found this thing. This is how this thing worked for me. And this is how this thing can work for you. And you're building that know, like, and trust. So you sell something on the back end. But so opening it up to saying we are done for you virtual event services, it makes it much more open-ended for, because not everyone wants to run a challenge. People just want to do a masterclass, which is a one-day thing, or do an automated webinar. So now that we've opened that up, it's much easier for us to find people who are in those ranges instead of just like, hey, have you ever heard of this one thing that no one has ever heard of for some reason, but it works really well? Yeah.
So have you, this feels like kind of the opposite of niching down, where you were a little too zoomed in and then you took a step back and now you're serving the virtual markets, or sorry, virtual events market. Is that correct?
Yes, that is 100% correct. I think, and because there was a couple of really big moments, especially after talking with Josh, that were more apparent, was one, it wasn't even too niched in. It was just the understanding of what the product is wasn't there. The market share for challenges, even though Tony Robbins just put on a million person challenge, even though Grant Cardone's was another, I don't know, 20,000 plus people challenge, just because that is big in the space that I understand doesn't mean it's big in the space that everyone understands. Yeah. So that was one of the things I had to zoom out and make conscious decisions on. And then the other one was having an understanding that's not about just looking for individual people. It's also about finding these agencies and being a foundational piece for them. And that's been some of the big micro pivots in the midst of all of this in the past year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like that. What is that? Are they called cognitive biases or cognitive something? Like a distortion.
Yeah.
One of the curse of knowledge, where you assume that because you know someone, everyone around you or everyone else knows. Or when you assume that you know something. Sorry, I'm getting it all confused. When you know something, you assume that the people around you or that others know this exact same thing, when that might not always be the case.
Yeah, 100%. And that was what I was falling into. And that was what we were stuck in for a very long time. One, because we had come from a market where it was a lot of challenges, where people were just consulting on challenges. So we had made this done for you services and we were bringing clients on that way. But we also didn't know how to reach people more than just in that space. And then once we started going outside of that space and saying we help coaches, authors, consultants, like that's a wide range too. So yeah, honing it into partnerships instead of just one-to-one actually really helped us be able to speak into people and say, hey, this is who we typically partner with, but we could help you on the outs. You're kind of like the outliers. We're also able to help them, but we just don't market it that way.
Okay. So how do you market it?
So right now it is, we help PR agencies build their clients' credibility using virtual events.
And did this targeting specific PR agencies, did that come out of your conversation with Josh?
That did, because one of our biggest clients, actually our biggest client, is a PR agency. Now, I didn't quite realize that until after that conversation with Josh, because like we've been working with him. We're actually running his second challenge this week. It's going on right now. But with that being said, was I didn't quite realize, I'm like, man, this guy's made $20 million a year. He's helped 20,000 people in coaching. It's like, why would he use us? It's like, you figured you have the capability, the capacity to do it by yourself. Yeah. But he's looking not so much to build something else in his company, but to use us as another foundational piece for everything else he does. Because in his company, he does all the articles, he does podcast introductions, does TV introductions, does like speaker introductions. So it's all about building that person's credibility, right? So for us, doing a virtual event is, it helps build credibility for any of their clients. Because it's like, hey, I ran an event, it had 20, 30 people in it, 100 people in it. This is what I got from it. And then you can take that to any of these bigger podcasts. You can take that to TV stations. You can take that to articles. And you're going to have that credibility of saying, this is who you are and this is who you've helped. And on top of that is, if they want to dive into social media, they can also take the day's worth of the content that they've gotten and cut it up and make it however many pieces of content they need for their social media stuff.
Okay. So he's doing the challenges himself and working with you guys, but what he wants to do is use your services and making virtual events for people in his portfolio or in his company, in his kind of sphere. And he's going to start using that to leverage more digital content and online content.
Yep, exactly. And that's because I didn't quite understand his strategy until after speaking with Josh, after I spoke with Josh Boone. That was one of the things that kind of opened my eyes to it. And then that's why the positioning statement is, we help PR agencies build their clients' credibility by using online events. Because we already have the credibility piece. When I can say, hey, I'm working with this guy who's been on Forbes, Entrepreneur, Good Morning America. He's traveled around the world as a speaker. He owns this PR agency. That gives me credibility in that space, instead of trying to go find one-off people where, yeah, we've helped people in that space, but I don't have this big credibility piece like I do with this guy.
And now you have, like, not only are you in with someone credible, but now you have another kind of like a selling point or an angle that you can show potential customers or clients. You can be like, hey, that's what this guy's doing. You can use our services to leverage the people you were doing PR for, and it just kind of helps work out.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's that big piece again, is instead of trying to find just marketing to one person at a time, is if you can sit there and partner with a PR company and just say, hey, this is what we do, this is how we're helping this person with their business, this is how we can help all of your clients.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, it's instead of hunting for one, you are being able to capitalize on finding the one person or the one company who has your ideal who already.
Interesting. So you zoomed out from a niche. Like, it was originally kind of, but it was, what I'm trying to say is, like, you zoomed out and you ended up finding that niche there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, rather than going inwards. Yep. Dude, that's fantastic. I've told you I've been working on the book. That's what Steven's been helping me be accountable for. And I've been having that problem, is I feel like I'm trying to write this for a very specific group rather than being like, why not take a step back? And I feel like in that case, see who I can serve rather than trying to be like, I'm going to serve you, and then not really knowing their problems or not really knowing what I can do to solve them.
Yeah. And I know that there's two pieces with that. is one, looking at it from where we were before now, is like I knew how to serve the people in that very niche.
Yeah.
It's a blue ocean category because there's no one in it that actually is doing what we're doing, but also no one understands it. So if they don't understand it, then they're not going to be able to actually flow you any kind of referrals, anything else, because they don't even know what to say. Like, I have no idea what that is. Like, I don't know how to help you with that. But that was one of the things was in that community that we were in where we were getting clients from, they understood what a challenge was, but then they also didn't know how to do one, so they didn't actually have the funds to put it on. Yeah. So that was a thing. And then now that we've zoomed out, the other thing I've noticed is being able to ask the question to this guy, because for him, I went to him, this guy who's over the PR agency, and I just said, hey, can you, I got on a call with him. I said, hey, what is some of the biggest pain points you have? And he just started writing them down, telling me exactly what hurts him the most,
yeah,
being a PR agency. Then I said, how would somebody speak to you? Like, how would they find you? How would they talk to you? And he said, this is how they would do it. And so he laid out a game plan for me to go find more PR agencies. So that's something to even think of too, is you could do two things. Is one is you can go find someone who is you're already writing the book towards and talk to them and say, hey, is this something that you got that someone like you or someone in this industry would want? Then that would give you feedback. What is your biggest pain point? And then if you zoomed out, you can go talk to those people on the more zoomed out scale and say, okay, how would this help you? Do you see this as something that serves you really well? Do you see this as something that could help that need? Also, if you're looking for someone to, you could even soft sell right there, which I think is pretty cool, but you're getting proven market data before you ever even launch. So that way it actually capitalizes on your landing page. It capitalizes whenever the book does come out, but yeah, you'll know who you're talking to instead of wondering and spending, if you decided to spend ad spend, it's like, if you know who you actually are marketing to, you can go so much further faster.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, that's definitely something that's been weighing heavy on my mind. But so I'm okay. So what exactly went down in this conversation with you and Josh? Because I know we talked about it for a little, but mentioned many times, I would say like key thing is what made that conversation so pivotal for the direction of your business? Like what changed? What clicked?
So man, so anyone who's listening, like that, Josh Boone is, this is a hard sell for Josh Boone. That guy is incredible. Absolute genius. I mean, for real, absolute genius. One of the biggest things, though, if I'm really honest, the only reason it worked for me was because I held my business with an open hand. I was willing to receive. Because if you go and you see Josh Boone, especially for me, he and I are both younger guys. It's not like he's someone who's in his 80s and he's like, son, let me tell you. He's someone, and so it's like you got to not have ego going into that conversation with him. But also, it's just, he is a genius when it comes to tearing apart a business and helping you reposition. Because we were just having a normal conversation about him traveling around in an RV and how he had exited a business and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden, I was sitting there talking to him about what we do. And he said, hold on. He said, let's just do an exercise. And so we did an exercise where he tore apart our entire business, like from bottom to top wording, told me to go do a pitch deck. And to be honest, I was like, what is that? I don't even know what that is. But the biggest thing was we had talked about it early in the conversation about being open to new experiences.
Yeah.
And so for me, this was a new experience, but I was open to it. I was willing to take something I'd been working on for the last 9 months and say, okay, dude, I've known you for a whopping 30 minutes, but if you can help me with it, go ahead. And like, there was nothing that he had told me that he was going to be able to help me at all. But I just said, okay, let's try it. And by the end of it, I think it took about 35, 40 minutes. But he had absolutely torn that whole thing down, sent me a bunch of notes that he had taken. And it was so pivotal that I listened, because the very next call I got on, instead of saying, hey, we help coaches, consultants, authors get in front of their ideal who using challenges, I started saying, we're a done-for-you virtual event services. That person said, oh, I'm interested in that. We're actually looking for someone that can do virtual events.
Damn, dude.
The very next call.
I bet they would have said, like, what's a challenge or something.
What's a challenge?
Like that. Yeah. That was my first
question. They would have, 100%. Because,
wow.
Yeah, no, they would have, 100%. Because they were literally saying, it's like, oh, we just were looking to put on, like, virtual events because we already do live events. Yeah. If I'd have said that we help do challenges, that person would have had no idea what we did. But that's the power of talking to him. And apparently he does that for all sorts of people. But it was incredible to watch him work, because he tore it all down in 30, 35, 40 minutes and then built it back up. And it was incredible. But yes, like holding my business with an open hand and having an understanding that I'm not the smartest in the room and being okay with that has allowed me to go further faster. I went, even going into this year, last year I'd only done like book calls to my Calendly was 19. Stepping into a couple of weeks ago, I had, I think, 40 in the past 2 weeks. So that's a big increase. But then in the middle of doing 40 was when I met Josh. And then since talking to Josh, I've already had more sales calls. We've already converted a client. Like, more has happened since I spoke to him.
Dude.
So, yes, incredible. I hold that conversation in very high esteem.
I hold him in high esteem, dude. I've had him on the podcast twice, and both episodes have just been fantastic. Just so much fun to talk to. I am really curious. So, how do you think that conversation would have gone differently, if at all, had you not previously spoken about keeping open-minded? Because it sounds like when you said, oh yeah, I'm open-minded, you set that identity of yourself. You're saying, yes, I'm open-minded. And then here he is tearing apart your business. And I remember talking to you about it, and you said you sat there and at first you wanted to have an ego about it and be like, what's going on here? But then you were like, no, I'm open-minded. Let me listen to it. Do you think that conversation would have gone differently had you guys not talked about that earlier?
100%. Because we were early in the conversation, we were just talking about New Orleans and how you had to be very open to new experiences. And I was telling him, it's like, that's how it is. And that's how you should be as a person, is just be open to new experiences. And then going into it, especially once he started tearing apart the business, yeah, there was that touch of ego that came up that I was like, I've known this guy for 20 minutes. He has no idea what I've done. It's like, I've done multi-millions online. I don't even know who he is. But then I was like, I just told him I was open-minded. So then I basically told my ego to shut up, and I just listened, and I took as many notes as possible. I've got 3 pages worth of notes, because I really do want to be that person that somebody can speak into and be open, because you just never know who you're going to meet. I've said it for the longest time, and I actually got to practice it. There was a quote by Tom Hardy that says, I treat the janitor like the CEO. So just because I didn't know this guy and he was wearing a hoodie with glasses on our first call doesn't mean that I have a precognitive bias when I see him. It's like, just because you're young and I don't see you with like 7-figure ClickFunnels awards on your wall doesn't mean that you don't have something you can share. But that was the biggest thing, was just, yes, if I hadn't have talked about being open-minded, and if I actually didn't live it, then I would have completely missed it, and I would have missed out on probably out of the 40 conversations I've had, one of the greatest ones. Like, because that one was so one-to-one and pivotal in my business. Yeah, I've had great business advice from people who've been in business 40 plus years, but it's like overview. This is what I did back at blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that's great, but how does that apply to me?
Dude.
But for him just speaking into me and actually taking apart my business, giving me a different positioning statement, giving me more knowledge towards my business, it radically changed how we do things.
And a mentor actually told me this once, is he said, I was definitely like, oh, I need more mentors. Like, I need someone to guide me. I need someone that knows what they're doing to show me. And he was basically like, peers are just as important as mentors. And maybe peer could be someone the same age as you. Someone in the same area, someone in the same level. Someone around you who has maybe walked the path, you know, a mile in front of you. Because you talk to a mentor, like what you're saying, someone who's 60, 70, 80, who they've lived their life. They're not even going to remember what they did when they were 25, 30, 35, like going through their problems. Yeah. They're not going to remember what they were thinking, that there was other things in their life going on at that time. Like this kind of just like the knowledge is there, but they might not remember exactly how they earned it because it's so far removed from who they are right now. And I think that's the importance of meeting with people around our age or younger who have still done crazy, great, respectable things. Because then you're like, oh, I'm getting into an area similar as that. What did you do differently? Or like, how can I learn from you? Rather than being like, oh, but you're my age. Like, how could you possibly have learned that?
Yeah, exactly. And it's just about being open-minded and being willing to learn. It was interesting. So the quote I just used about Tom Hardy, I treat the janitor the same as the CEO. I was on a podcast and this gentleman talked about how he had a ex-NFL lineman on his podcast. And the story, just like really short, was that the guy went from the NFL, retired, and then he went to, I think, New Jersey and started some construction companies that turned into a $10 million business.
Damn.
And then 2008 hit. And he took on so many projects that he was, like, out of business overnight, and he had to, like, escape people trying to break his knees, literally left the city, moved halfway across the country, and he was a janitor making $8 an hour. It's like, just imagine that.
Yeah.
If you came across a janitor and you just treated him like trash, or if you treated him really well, because you never know who the janitor was or is going to be. And now he runs multi-million dollar companies again. So it really is imperative to treat everyone really well. Doesn't matter age, doesn't matter what they may look like. The CEO of Dollar General looks like a homeless man, if you ever look him up. He drives a Lamborghini.
Yeah.
But if you just saw him on the street, you would say, hey, you need some money, because the dude, it looks homeless. So it's just about keeping an open mind that not everyone flashes their success, not everyone flashes their wealth, but there's so many people out there that are willing to give what they have, which is knowledge and understanding. And in Josh's case, it's understanding more than knowledge. It's almost wisdom, which is like the highest form of knowledge. And that's incredible to be so young, because there's so many people that I've spoken to that are older and they don't have that level of like intentionality with people. Yeah. So that's like my biggest thing that I'm looking at too, is A, intentionality, and B, he's got so much. I've talked to a guy yesterday that he took his company public. He has $1.8 billion under investment. Like, that's crazy. But he still didn't have, he had some of the same business smarts as Josh, but just because Josh doesn't have $1.8 billion under investment doesn't mean that his skill sets aren't the same. Like, that guy was crazy, and there's a lot of stuff that guy knows that maybe Josh doesn't know, and I know I don't know. But just speaking to Josh, he talks in such a high business IQ that it's insane. Like, I've sit there and I've listened to Alex Hormozy for hours, Grant Cardone for hours, and I just haven't come across someone one-to-one that is like him.
Yeah. Dude, I think another thing to be said about the CEO to janitor, that part, is the level of respect that you treat people, not like a certain person, but people as a whole. If you're someone who wants things from other people, you're going to treat different people differently. You're going to treat your boss like differently than treat someone off the street, than you're going to treat a homeless man. Like, you know, that kind of stuff just comes across. You're at a party, you're trying to just like talk to the people who can make you money or you can do business with. Like, that person is not someone you'd want to spend your time with, compared to someone who just like is respectful to everybody they're around. That kind of person just like has some sort of magnetism around, like, you just want to talk to them and be friendly, because it's so rare to find.
Yeah, that's something I've been saying a lot. And because I said it yesterday at this small group, one of the guys is actually looking at connecting me with his sales team, because his sales team doesn't have this, but taking the transaction off of people. So many times I've seen it, and I used to be this way. I used to be in sales. I mean, technically I still am, but I used to be on a sales team. But we were taught to treat everyone like a transaction. Okay, so this is how you're going to close them. We're going to do a one call close, and this is how you do it. It's like, but you're not treating somebody like a person if you're trying to push them to do something. It's like, instead, if you take the transaction off of them and say, how can I really help this person? Because if your product sucks and you don't have any belief in it, why are you pushing them towards it anyways? Maybe you should just be an affiliate and just say, hey, this person's stuff is really good. Like, here, go use this person's stuff. But that's been my understanding the past year, is stop looking at people like transactions, even if you need money. Like, it doesn't matter what position you're in. If you need money and you come across as needing money, you're not going to get money. People can smell that a mile away.
Yeah.
But also, is if you truly just go out into the world and add value as much as possible, it'll always come back in some way, shape, or form.
I totally agree.
It doesn't always mean that it'll come back financially, but it will come back in either relationships. It could come back in a conversation that changes your business. It could come back in a multitude of ways, but you got to take the transaction off.
And I do want to talk about that, on how, what exactly you do to provide value to a bunch of other people, and how it does end up coming around. But real quick, to close the loop on the Josh thing and his business intelligence, dude, I will also have to say, like, his philosophy on life, just in general, like, he's not just wise in the business world. Like, this dude just feels like he's got it figured out. And I know he doesn't. I know no one really does. But, like, his just sense of inner calmness, masked by the fact that he's so not innerly calm all the time, is like I don't know. It's a very wise, very, I just enjoy all my conversations with him. And I feel like he has a really cool philosophy, one that we've talked about on the show. Go ahead, check out the other two episodes with Josh Boone, everybody. Thank you very much. All right. Self-plug. But yeah, what you do for value, which I really like, and ultimately did lead to this conversation with Josh, is at the end of every single call that you have with people. Number one, you hold free calls with people for 30 minutes. You just leave your Calendly open, which yep. is amazing. I think that's such a cool thing that you do, and it not only increases your network, but you're not doing it back to the respect thing on treating people. You're not doing it to increase your network or to make money or doing it. You're just doing it because it's, I feel like it's you. You just want to provide value to others. Every single call you end with, what can I do to help you out? Or how can I provide value to you? What is the exact thing yep. you end with?
So the way I end all my calls is, how can I provide value to you? Or how can I help you? It just depends on the conversation. But yeah, that's the way I look at life. I don't believe that finances is finite. Our government is literally printing money. That's why inflation has gone up. So why should I sit there and just try to hoard everything I have? Now, why should I try to hoard connections? Why should I try to hoard my finances when or if I time, actually...
Dude. It's not just
yeah, and time. Time. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But that's like when I say that, like, how can I add value to you? I mean it. Like, for you, it was, hey, can you just hold me accountable to getting done with this section of the book? It's like, okay, cool, I'll do that. If it's, hey, I'm looking to get on more podcasts. Okay, cool, I know a couple people. If it's, hey, do you know anyone in this realm? It's like, yeah, I think I know a couple people. It's anything I can do. When I say, how can I add value? I put it all on the table. There's nothing off the table because I mean it. Like, I want to help people succeed. Because the yeah. more, so, there's a quote that this lady said, and I saw Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he said it too today, which was, rising tides raises all boats. So for me, if I just provide enough value, then that means everyone wins. Everyone comes up, and in turn, I'll come up too. It's not a direct one-to-one transaction, but just through making the world better, it'll make my life better, if that makes yeah. sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. And like, where did this mindset come from? Is it something your parents instilled in you? Is it something you just kind of figured out along the way? Like, how did this show up?
That definitely did not come from my parents. I love my parents. They're doing a lot better now, but that's one of the biggest things with my dad, especially. He used to tell me that everybody had it out for me, like, to always keep a chip on my shoulder. Right. No one had my best interests at heart. So that's how I carried myself for a very long time. But one of the biggest shifting moments for me was after I left my corporate job back in 2020 is I didn't know what to do, right? So I was sitting there working with my wife and we were in business. I had to just let go of having the expectation that everyone was going to be finances. And honestly, even as I would just run into people, once we had the millions and we're making all this money and able to help people, was I truly wanted to know, like, how can I help you? Because when people would open up and say, hey, this is how you could help me, then it's like, okay, cool. And then all of a sudden I would just see, it just was more fulfilling, I think. Like, the more I dive into it, I think that's the biggest piece, was the fulfillment piece. Like, I love to see people be able to actually succeed. I love yeah. to see people actually get that next step and breakthrough in their business or in their life. And that was how my mindset really shifted, because I came across one guy. He is actually one of my mentors that, in the midst of a time when we needed finances, he poured into us for no reason other than just wanting to. And because he did that, it just opened up my mindset to, it's like, it doesn't matter what the situation is. There's that people actually want to help you. You just got to be open about your situation. You got to be open about what you actually need instead of just trying to be like, oh, I'm good. Because that's been a big thing for me, is like men's mental health. I've been battling that for the last 6 years, like trying to get more awareness brought to it. Because I've just seen it in my own life where you try to be hard, you try to be the toughest guy in the room, when really on the inside, it's like you're fighting suicidal thoughts or depression, or you're sitting there addicted to pornography. Like, whatever it is, you're covering up, you're masking it because you've been told from yeah. a kid that you got to be strong, you got to be the toughest guy, can't cry, there's
can't
no emotion.
On the playground, yeah.
Exactly. And I think that that's where breaking off that mindset and just being open, it's like, no, this is what I'm going through, this is how I feel. And still at the same time being able to be a strong man with and have emotions too. It's like, hey, you know, we were built in with those things. Like, we were born with them. Yeah. So there must be a reason why we have them. But I think that that's been one of the key things that's shifted my mindset, is just being open. Like, just being authentic with people instead of trying to pretend like I'm someone else.
Dude, the the weird thing about emotions is that the more you kind of put them in a box or like stuff them down, the more they just show up in a stronger way later. And I totally agree. I think it is very important for people to be open. I've had, you know, many episodes in the past, including the one with Josh. He mentioned how he had he wanted to kill himself at one point in that road trip. I don't know if he told you that. That's all in the episode. But
he did not tell me that.
Yeah, I mean, we've all like he sold his company and was going and like thought that that would bring happiness, but it didn't. And it just goes to show that, like, number one, yes, guys don't really talk about stuff much. And I think that's a really important thing to, like, whether or not you know, have 30 minutes all the time to schedule calls with random people like what Steven does. Not many people will do that. But just check in on your guy friends every once in a while. And that's a shout out to another company that we've had, always check on the homies. But, like, check in on your friends every once in a while, because I feel like that is something that men don't really do. They don't really check in on each other, and that's something, I don't know, I think we could all benefit from just knowing that someone's there.
Yeah, 100%.
Whether something's going on or not, just yeah, knowing that someone is there for you is a very, like, comforting feeling.
Yeah, I know that that's, like, I have a mentee that I'm mentoring him in e-commerce, and that's not something I typically advertise. It's this guy literally came to me and I told him everything I did. And he said, "Hey, can you please just help me?" And I said, "Yeah, it'd be this price for me to help you." And he said, "Okay, cool." And he paid it. But with him is the same person I am on this podcast is who I am with him. I just pour into him. I help him in his life. I help him with his business. And one day he just texted me and he said, "Hey man, I feel like you're the only guy in my corner right now." He said, I've honestly been fighting suicidal thoughts. He's like, "Can you just be here for me?" It's like, "Yeah, bro, I got you." And that's crazy. Like, you never hear about a mentee reaching out to a mentor and just saying, "Hey, this is how I feel." Like, most of the time people just think if you're a mentor, then you're just helping somebody in business, or if you're a life coach just in life. It's like, but why not be both? Like, why not just be a friend? Like, the best way to mentor someone, as you said earlier, it's like, I'm not radically far ahead of this guy just because I made a couple more bucks online than he has. I've just had different experiences than him. So just because I'm a little bit ahead, does that mean that I can't just be a friend to him? Like, just be there for him when he's going through it and him and his wife are having to move halfway across the country? Like, just be there. Just be a friend. Yeah.
Dude, sometimes it's like your mentor can be someone, like, same stage of life as you, but they just happen to be farther ahead on this certain thing. Like, you could be mentoring them back on something like they're looking out for help for, like a skill set that you have that they'd like, but it's just like a totally different, it really, like, I used to think it had to be like Karate Kid, Mr. Miyagi helping out, like, this master helping out a kid, but, like, that's not life. Real life is, like, you probably have tons of mentors right now that you're probably just not channeling or tapping into.
100%. Yeah.
So what has been, back to the calls that you have with people, what have been, like, we say how you ask, "How can I help you?" How have you been helped from these calls talking to random people?
So one was how Josh helped, but even more than that is there was a gentleman who he was able to speak into how to run a business just from a computer and how to run a multi-million dollar business just from his computer. And I've heard people talk about that. There was a gentleman who was one of our clients that he was doing that. He was doing robotics, setting up these robotic assembly lines for Volkswagen, Chevy, Tesla. And it was just him and his wife. And I thought, there's no way. Like, there's no way that you're making $40 million a year and it's just you two. Like, that, there's no way. And because I've always come from, like, that solopreneur mindset where if I'm saying that I'm doing it, I'm literally doing everything. And what this gentleman spoke into me about, which gave me context to our past client, was he said, "I just have contractors." He said, I know really good contractors that do the job really well. He said, "I pay them about 5% of the overall bring in, and then they do a great job, and then I just manage it online." Because he sets up entire trade shows from his computer and a cell phone. And he said that in his industry, when 2020 hit, pretty much all of his competition went out of business because they had 100,000 square foot warehouses and 50 plus employees. And he said, "It was just me and a computer and my phone. He said, I don't have employees. I just have contractors. And that was one of those like eye-opening moments for me that it's like, there's a lot more ways to do business than just the, this is how you're going to grind it out and make it all happen yourself. You don't have to. Yeah. You can actually hire people, or you can contract it out and make it really efficient. Like, that guy has zero employees. He's been doing it for 18 years. So he's doing something right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty sweet, man. Damn. Yeah. That,
yeah.
That
there's been more.
The fact that he's raking that in by himself also, but yeah, it does go to show that like you can still be on your, I feel like a lot of the reasons people pick solopreneurship versus, you know, starting your company and like hiring employees and stuff is that you still want that independence. Cause let's face it, like when you're running a company, like you have, you know, even just one employee, but like, let's say you're running a company, grow, it's got like 50 employees now. You're not really as independent as you'd think, because now you're responsible for all these 50 employees. You're responsible for feeding them. Like, you have to meet payroll. Versus if you're a solopreneur,
yep,
you kind of are in charge of your time, what you're doing. Like, you want to keep the lights on for yourself, sure, but it's a bit more independent, and I feel like you don't have to do that solo. You can get these contractors. You can get a virtual assistant or something to help ease the load.
Yeah, 100%. There's... even with that, like especially with contracting out, is there so many ways to look at that? There was, when it comes to the employees, like the guy I spoke with yesterday who took his company public, is once you go public, you actually have so much more complexities. You have to worry about stock prices. Now all of a sudden you have a whole board of directors, so you got to worry about all of them instead of just making your own decisions. So I like to think of it as like maneuverability. If maneuverability when you're a solopreneur is basically a speedboat, you can just turn it whenever, then being the head of a massive company or a publicly traded company, that thing's like trying to turn an aircraft carrier. Like, it's very difficult to make any kind of pivots, because you can't just say, hey, we're doing this. You have to ask 15 other people, and then it's got to go through all these different stages before you get a yes or no. And that's why... it's about controllability. It's like, how can you control it and still run it the way you want to? Sarah Blakely is a good example of this. Sarah Blakely was one of the first women billionaires, and she was a great example. She had 100% ownership of her company until a couple years ago. So anytime that she said, hey, we're going to do this, they just had to say, okay. She owned the entire thing. She didn't have any equity. Like, no one had equity in the company.
Yeah. Damn, that's a really good point. All right, let's switch it a little, talk about your habits. And what I'm really curious about is, how did moving to Oklahoma change any of the habits you currently have?
The biggest one is, now there's been a lot more volunteer opportunities. So with that being said, is like, volunteering has been top of mind, besides business and family, of course. Is we've been volunteering at, I had the opportunity to go feed the homeless, and that was one of the craziest experiences, because these people are just so grateful for a meal. And I'm sitting here, and there's been so many people I've talked to that they get stressed out about the finances, meeting the bills, or what they're going to eat today. And it's like, man, these people are just excited to go. And this was the day before a massive ice storm came through. So they knew that this was coming. Like, there was people, there's a guy that I know that he runs a nonprofit helping the homeless. And he said that it was so cold that one guy he had a blanket on and it was frozen to him. Like, he was about to die. And the homeless man told him, he said, I was prepared to die. And that just leads me to an understanding that for me, yes, I give my time away for free to get on 30-minute calls, but also give away my time to help other people. Yeah. Like, that's such a big hobby. And for my wife and I and my son, we love it. We love going out and helping people. We love being able to just do those little things, go pour into people, help people that are moving to Oklahoma just move in. There's been a lot of opportunities for us to volunteer, and it's just been incredible. But that's one of those things that has radically changed, is volunteer work.
That's pretty awesome. Is your son still playing basketball?
He does not. He does not play it anymore, because he said, Dad, the only way I'm going to play is if you coach. And I said, sorry, I'm not coaching. So he said, I'm not playing. I said, okay, fair enough.
Does he do any other sports?
No. So he just at home right now. He just chilling at the house.
Nice. That's fun. Okay, so that was the big habit that changed. And it's a hobby as well, going out, volunteering, helping others. Anything else that's been going on in your life that you talked about?
I would say, I know that one of the habits that's kind of stayed the same and kind of reiterated, it's changed some, is how much I read. Like, I think I read a lot. I read when I first wake up, I read in the middle of the day, I read at night. But I kind of got challenged. There's a gentleman, he sent me his book that hasn't come out yet. His company only works with people who are making $100 million plus a year. And I said, well, that's kind of crazy. And when I was talking to him, he's like, oh, yeah, I read like 70 to 90 books a year. And I was like, dang, I'm nowhere near that. And he just showed me, he's like, yeah, here's all my books. And I was just thinking, okay, so I got to up my reading game. But that's where I've been is, this is one of the mindset shifts that I've looked at is I want to be like the person who I envision myself being in 10 years would not be playing video games, would not be spending time watching TV, would not just be drinking a mojito in the middle of the afternoon. He would be doing something else. And so it's like, well, if me in 10 years would be doing something else, why would me right now be doing the things that aren't going to get me there?
Yeah.
So that's where I've just been shifting my perspective to start doing those habits now to get me to be that person in 10 years.
That's a good shift. I like that. So what do you do when you read a book and you want to apply it in real life? Because it's one thing to have the knowledge, but then to actually use it is a whole other thing. So what are some of the things you do to apply the stuff that you read and actually put it to practice?
So one of the biggest ones is, especially if it is, I'll just use a business book as an example, but if it is let's say it's a business book on Facebook ads.
Yeah.
And it's like, here's some ways to implement, is I will go and get my Facebook ads manager pulled up and I will build out an entire campaign exactly the way that person said, just to see and compare it to what I've already done. So that way I can understand, is it the same? Is it different? And then compare his results to mine and say, is my results better or worse? And that's similar to really any other book that I read, is I take it and I will examine it. So let's say that I just wanted to be more giving, it's like, okay, what does that mean to me? Like, instead of just saying, okay, be more giving, that sounds good, what does that mean to me? It's like, does that mean be more giving financially? Does that mean be more giving with my time? If it's a book on how to be a better runner, it's like, okay, tilt your feet more at this certain angle outwards. It's like, okay, so then I'd go outside and I'd run and then I'd tilt my feet a little outside. That's how I've been working out. That's what, because I did powerlifting for a number of years, is I'd watch people do it. I read books on how people did it, and then I just went to the gym and did it. I just went to the gym and said, okay, I watched them do it just like this. I read that they did it just like this. And then I would do it just like that time and time again until I got mine to look almost identical to what they did. But that's how I've gone on to apply things in multiple ways in my life, even in my marriage. Is there's a book that I read years ago that I didn't apply. It's called The Five Love Languages. And it gave me I read it and I told my wife, okay, I read it and it didn't help me at all. It's like, yeah, it didn't help you because you didn't do anything with it. And because it helped me understand, like when I went back and reread it, I got to understand exactly why she does the things she does, what she needs to feel love, and how she reciprocates that. So for me, as I said, okay, so if her number one love language is physical touch, then me just cleaning the house is not helping her feel loved.
Yeah.
Me going and working a crap load of hours is not helping her feel loved. So it's really just like holding her and cuddling and watching a movie. That makes her feel loved. That gives her physical touch and quality time.
Yeah.
But application, like having knowledge is great, but I actually really hate the terminology and the statement that people say wisdom is applied knowledge. It's not. if you really think about it, there's knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. Like, wisdom is not applied knowledge. Once you apply knowledge, you get an understanding. And then once you have a deeper understanding, once you've done 10,000 hours and you get mastery, then you have wisdom.
Huh.
Wisdom is a mastery of something.
Yeah.
And when you have wisdom, when you have a mastery of something, if you run into someone who's a master of something, they can tell you exactly where you went wrong and exactly what to do. If you just have a knowledge, you go, this might work, but I'm not sure. And even if you have an understanding, it's like, well, this is what worked for me, but I'm not entirely sure how it could apply to your situation.
Yeah.
But someone who has wisdom and has a mastery of whatever the topic is can tell you exactly what the issue is. There's a story I heard years ago that I read. Well, I wouldn't say years ago, but I read it recently again, where there was a giant ship that they couldn't get the rudder to turn. And so they had hired the best people they could find, and they had spent tens of thousands of dollars to try to fix this rudder, and it wasn't getting fixed. So they went and found a master shipbuilder and brought him out. And they said, hey, this is what the problem is. No one else can fix it. You're our last hope, basically. And so he went and he found this one spot, looked over the whole ship, went to this one spot around the rudder, took a hammer, hit the side of the ship, and then it knocked a loose bolt out, and then the rudder worked. And he said, okay, that'll be $100,000. And they said, why should we pay you that much money? All you did was just knock a bolt out. He said, you're not paying me for the action I did. You're paying me for the hours of mastery it took for me to figure out which bolt was out of place.
Yeah.
And I've all held on to that ever since, because that is what mastery looks like.
Dude, one of my favorite quotes for wisdom and knowledge is, knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit, and wisdom is knowing that it does not go in fruit salad. That's true. There was something about, so we were just talking about, oh, in spirit of Valentine's, what did you think of The Five Love Languages? Was it a good book? Would you recommend?
I would 100% recommend it. And only if you're willing to apply it. So this is for people, even if you're not in a relationship, even if you're single, go read Five Love Languages. Because if you're looking to date, if you're looking to be married one day, or whatever it looks like for you, you get a deeper understanding of how people feel loved.
Yeah.
Like for me, mine is quality time. My number one is acts of service. So it always has been. So for me, physical touch was at the very bottom. My wife's number one is physical touch. And so I had to force myself to just hold her and just love on her, but that makes her feel loved. Yeah. And in turn, it's actually built a muscle in me where I actually enjoy physical touch now. But I also still love that she'll cook dinner or take the trash out or clean the house. That makes me feel loved. And having that understanding that each person is different, that each person has their own unique understanding and how they feel loved, that book is great at that, but only if you apply it.
Dude, I find it interesting how acts of service is your love language, and you just as a person do a bunch of acts of service for others. Just giving your time and giving, like saying, how can I be of value? That's a complete act of service, like very selfless of you. And I think it's really cool that it's almost kind of like you loving the world and loving the people around you.
Exactly. And that's, again, that's something that even understanding with the five love languages was, not only do I do that, but if I'm in person, like if that's somebody who they walk up and give me a hug, even if I'm not a hugger, I'll hug them because I know that that's how they feel loved.
Yeah.
And for me, doing acts of service is, yes, I want the world, because that's the thing that the world is missing right now. I mean, I don't know if you heard about it, but Michigan State just had a shooting on campus. Like now, the world is missing that love piece. Like the thing is like people are missing grace, like grace and love, because so often, and a lot of that comes from transaction, or it comes from in a bad transaction too. It's like, this person did me wrong, so I'm just going to cut them off, or I'm going to do something violent to them. It's like, but what if they did you wrong and didn't even know it? Like, there's been so many people in my life that have done me wrong, but I've never voiced it because they didn't even know it. So who am I to sit there and hold a grudge and be upset when I won't even talk to them about it?
Yeah.
It's like, maybe they just didn't know. And even if they did know, you got to learn how to forgive and let it go. Cause there's so many, for every one bad person in your life, you're going to find 10 people who actually want what's good for you. You just got to go looking for them and stop thinking that everyone is against you. There really is people that care. They want to see you succeed. They want to see you win. But as long as you hold a grudge against the one person who did you wrong back in sixth grade, then you're never going to be able to move forward. You're just going to be stuck right there.
Dude, that is deep. That is deep. I've been dealing with there's been some stuff going on in my life where just trauma from a past relationship has been affecting a current one. And I think it is really important to just kind of realize that everyone's different. Every situation is different. Yes, this happened to you in the past. Yes, this is me talking to myself. But like you don't have to bring that with you every single time, you know? Like, you don't have to bring your past with you. You can let it go and say, yeah, this is a chance to start anew. This is we can turn a new leaf here. And I think that's really cool. I think that's a really, dude, the mindset that you have just as a whole, whether it be work, life, and everything in between, it's very commendable, man. I appreciate you coming on the show and talking about it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate you having me here for the second time. Thank you for giving me your time. But yeah, that's, it's one of those things, especially speaking into what you just said, that that was one of the things that almost destroyed my marriage. Was to, I was holding on to how my dad used to love my mom, which was only going to work. He never said he loved her, never held her, he never said he was proud of me, like none of that. Yeah. So I brought that into my marriage, and it literally got to the point where my wife was going to leave. And there were so many times that we almost were divorced because I couldn't let go of an identity that wasn't even mine. Like, that wasn't even mine. That was my dad's. And I just picked it up. And then there was a, I would sit there and I would judge people based on, it's like, well, I know that the last person that did this exact same stuff, they hurt me because down the line they did this. It's like, but that's not the same person.
Yeah.
They just because they have some of the same tendencies doesn't mean they're going to hurt you the same way. But I also believe that what you speak into this world is what you get. So if you just sit there and say, oh, that person sucks, like this person's going to hurt me, then you're going to get what you're speaking because you're going to build evidence in favor of what you believe. And that's whenever you can shift your belief systems to believing, because not everyone is good. There are some evil people in this world, but if you can shift your belief to thinking that, that most people are good, then you're much more open to having new experiences.
And attracting the
good ones. You're much more open to speaking to more people and attracting the good ones instead of just trying to push everyone away. That's how you become magnetic. Yeah. And I think everyone is magnetic, but everyone is either a magnet towards themselves or they're a magnet that pushes everyone away. And you just need to choose who you are.
The butt of the magnet, the bottom side, the one that repels. Yeah, that's very true. And I totally agree with what you bring into it. This is what one of my therapists has said, and it's so true. If you go looking for trouble, you'll find it. And I agree with that.
Oh, you'll find it, yeah.
Well,
100%.
There we go, Steven. Another great episode in the books. We kind of talked about it. Let's do the closing questions real quick. We can do the book one last. But number one, first of all, what kind of music do you listen to?
So for me, mainly it is Christian music. That's the main thing. Sometimes some country music, but mainly Christian music.
Christian music. Now, what kind of TV shows do you... Well, you're trying to move away from TV shows. Movies or TV shows... I know we got rid of video games. What are you watching these days?
Yes. So I haven't watched as much TV recently. It's funny for me growing up, history was my favorite subject. I loved history. So one of the shows that whenever we do watch TV that we watch as a family is called Mysteries of the Abandoned. And it's like these abandoned buildings all around the world where they just give history on it and what they look like right now. And I don't know. For me, I think that's pretty interesting, yeah.
Now, what kind of books are you reading? Seeing how you're trying to get up to 70 a year.
Man, there's so many books. So for me, the Bible is a big one. I read the Bible every day. That's just one of those things. That's part of my belief system. There's like Expert Secrets is one that I've read a bunch of times. Like, that's a great book. There's the book right now that this gentleman sent me that he only works with people making 100 million plus a year. It's called Uncertain Solutions, I think is what it's called. That one is really good. Let me see if I can find it.
Now, are you Catholic, Christian? What is
the Uncertainty Solution? I'm Christian. Okay. Yeah. Yep. The book right now that I find really good, The Uncertainty Solution. It hasn't even come out yet. It comes out in May.
Sweet.
But I got a free copy ahead of time. But that one, when it comes out, it's really, really good. I got another one I got to start reading, which is from another guy. It's all about marketing. So that one's, again, really good. Yeah, the guy who gave me the marketing book, that one, he apparently has like a licensee program, which talking to him about what that looks like is very cool. And how you transition your teaching material into a license instead of a franchise was a whole seminar that he took me through, which was cool. But yeah, that's another book. Let's see. There's a book that one of our, I don't know if you know who Deontay Wilder is, but heavyweight champion of boxing. And he fought Tyson Fury a couple years ago. But with Deontay Wilder, he did a foreword for this for some of our friends. We just recently met them, but they have a book called The Punchback Story, and that's a good book. So that's another one that I've been reading. And then again, for anyone that is looking for a good book that is kind of a timeless one, Atomic Habits. Atomic Habits is really good.
Atomic Habits is excellent. Atomic Habits is pretty much what inspired the show. Just my love for It's not my love for habits. It's my love for what habits do to your life. Honestly, it's like the fact that whether you choose them or not, you have patterns that you do every day, and they pretty much determine not only what you do, but like the quality of your life. It's a pretty nuts concept. Love Atomic Habits.
Oh, 100%.
You're the one that put me on $100 million offer. Yeah. I didn't know about that book until our episode before. And that is one of those books where you're just like, damn, he really just chalked it full of free value in there. Well, not free, but like, I felt like I should have been paying way more for that. So that was a really good book.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's a great book. For any, that one is one that I overlooked. $100 million offers is amazing. Like, that is a book that if you just spent a good few months just rereading it and really diving in and applying it to your business, or even if you don't have a business, just how you, if you ever wanted to have one,
take apart other businesses,
it's like, just apply that and you can come up with a great offer. Yeah.
Agreed. Lastly, where can people find you and your company?
So you can visit us at holoco.com. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, look for the guy who kind of looks like Jason Momoa or Aquaman with the name Stephen Pemberton. That's probably me. But yeah, you can find me there. If you message me on either of those, or LinkedIn, I'm there too. But if you message me there, that is me. It's not a VA. It's not our top sales guy. That will be me.
And I will also, if you're cool with it, throw the link to your Calendly in the show notes below so that if anyone does want to talk, feel free.
100%. To that's awesome. And I'm going to call some people out right now. Like, I'm about hot take right now with Armand. The Calendly, if it's in the thing, somebody schedule a call. I don't know why y'all scared, but so many people will watch it and they'll send a message, but they won't book a call. It's like, hey, just book a call. It's just a conversation. It's really, how can I add value? It's really, how can I just help you get that next step? There's a lady I talked to from Israel that she didn't even have $200 to her name. It's not about how much money can I make off of her. I literally gave her a game plan for her business because she was willing to get on the phone.
While we're at it, say hi.
So I'm just throwing that out there. That's my two cents.
I just want my fans to talk. All right, Steven, thank you so much for coming on the show, dude. It's so awesome talking to you again. You'll get the first copy of my book. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Appreciate it. I will let you know how it is, because like, just give me the pre-readers edition so I can tell you all the typo mistakes. That's what I used to do in high school and college. People used to send me their papers before they publish it, because I don't know. Those are my two strongest subjects, history and English. So I've always been a pretty good copywriter. So yeah.
Sweet.
Shameless plug right there for my high school year.
Shameless plug. Now you're going to get a whole bunch of calls for copywriting. All right. See you later, my man.
See ya.